I don't know how much you would hold other physicians who happen to be working in the same clinic or whatever, but when it comes to other professional corporations, when it comes to law firms, accounting firms, and those type of situations, you really are relying on the reputation of that firm. You go there with the idea you're not maybe even looking for a specific doctor. You're looking for this law firm, this accounting firm has this reputation. And if I go there, I may not know anything about the individual that I end up having to work with. But I feel that whole firm, that accounting firm, this brokerage firm or whatever, that whole entity is behind me. And that's the way that I look at it. So I have just come to the conclusion that the amendments I have to, I think that this is quite an attempt to find that balance. But I think that there are advantages to bigness. The larger firms, the various types, make a lot of money, and that, to some degree, has a lot to do with their reputation. So I just think, frankly, that this is really a bad policy, and I have to say that one of the most difficult things that all of us have in terms of professionals is policing ourselves as professions. And I think that when you have the hammer hanging over you, that my colleague can drag us down, I think that's a real good incentive to make sure that everybody toes the line and do as they should do. Because a lot of these situations get very difficult, and self-policing of professions is something that I'm not sure that there have been many professions, if any professions, who've been able to achieve it. And I think we should have as much pressure on to do that as possible. So I'm not going to be supporting the bill.
Okay, the bill as it stands, or the amendments.
Or the amendments, Madam Chair.
Okay, anybody else? Senator Bunn.
I think the amendments simply make it a little more confusing and complicated. I think the bill itself is workable.
So we got one for the bill, one against the bill, one for amendments. Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, let's put it to the test. I'll move the amendments. Although, let me...
I just got to divvy them up here.
Let me... I think we need to make one change in them. I hope you'll forgive this. These have been drafted rather hurriedly. On line 3N and 3O, regarding the physicians, there's a limitation there regarding the corporate insurance that would avoid vicarious liability, as $500,000 times the number of shareholders licensed within the state to render the same professional service. I would like to delete the reference to render the same professional service, so that we simply have it, the insurance to avoid vicarious liability ought to be $500,000 times the number of shareholders licensed within the state, whether they're physicians or whatever. Normally, in physician corporations, they are all physicians. But I think if you had a mixture, it wouldn't be I don't think it would be right to allow the limitation of vicarious liability to operate in that fashion. So with that change, I'd like to move the amendment, and let's see what happens to it.
So then we still have a 300 for each shareholder.
300 for each.
Other than physicians,
500,000 for physicians. Allow the corporation to avoid, to insulate that liability by insuring against it, and to relate this only to those who are within this state and licensed to practice within this state.
Okay. Further questions? Senator Shoemaker has moved this bill.
Craig Smith was late for this. I just flagged me with something. You may want to.
So all we have is letter. Mr. Smith, you want to come forward? Dave, if you're going to come, you got to come and get your name on the record.
Madam Chair, this is Craig Smith. Mr. Taylor presented me with a copy of this a few minutes ago, and I asked for just technical observations. And if I could do that before you proceed, I'd appreciate
it. Sure, please do.
On line 3I, the word vicarious liability is used, which I think is the first time it's introduced in this paragraph. I think it'd be better to say such joint and several liability, make the language consistent. On the next line, 3J, I think it's important to define the time period where that shareholder status is determined. Is it at the time the malpractice occurred, or is it the time the judgment is being collected? So I just raise that as an issue. On line 3K, I would suggest that grammatically we change the period to a semicolon and add the words provided however. That way it ties the two concepts together, the $500,000 cap and the overall cap. That's just a matter of grammar. And then again, the word vicarious liability, I think, should be deleted, or the word vicarious should be deleted on line 3K and insert such joint and several, consistent. Then on, everybody up where I am?
Yep.
Line 3O, again, joint and several liability for vicarious. On line 3P, again, the timing issue of when this liability is determined, whether it's the event causing malpractice or at the time of the claim is a, well, time of levy, we'll say. On line 3S, the same grammatical suggestion I had earlier, which is semicolon provided, however, and then add the word such joint and several liability rather than vicarious liability. Those are the only technical observations.
Madam Chair?
Senator Shoemaker.
Craig, maybe you can answer this, maybe you can't. What are the present rules regarding vicarious liability of a shareholder who becomes a shareholder after the negligent act before the judgment?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, to my knowledge, there are no cases interpreting this. So I don't know the answer to that question.
Does anyone out there know the answer to that question? If a shareholder becomes a shareholder after the negligent act, but before judgment, is that shareholder vicariously liable? So it relates back to those who were shareholders at the time of the act?
I think that's consistent with partnership law. My memory is.
Okay. That ought to be the rule here throughout.
So we're going to put at time of negligent act or whatever is suitable lawyer words.
Yes.
That fit into
yeah.
there.
Yeah. We ought to make it clear then, I guess, in the opening language, which is essentially the same as the present law, that it relates to the who at the time of the act.
We'll let the council figure out where to put it in, but
yeah.
You need to make it explicit.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, just one other question, just so I understand this, and I guess for the record that anybody reading this testimony can understand it, and that is that you're imposing two levels of liability. The first is that any individual shareholder never has more than whatever you know, $300,000 or $500,000 of liability. Is that correct?
No.
No, it's not.
The one who is the tortfeasor is.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. On the joint and several liability theory. That shareholder, obviously the word innocent shareholder comes to mind, but I won't use that one, has never more than the $300,000 or $500,000 exposure. But if other assets are available to satisfy the claim using your formula, then they're not even exposed to that extent. Is that correct? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Okay, Senator Shoemaker, I think, is moving
about with the number of conceptual amendments here, redefining vicarious and assuring that the that there's a time of negligent action. Okay, Senator Schumer, you then with those provisions, are you moving the entirety of the Dash 8 amendments, which is page 1, 2, and 3, or are they separate?
Or do we care? Bill?
Madam Chair, that never really worked. If they could be done either way, I mean, they are three separate issues, but they all relate to...
I understand that, but I was not aware where they came from.
I think I can move the whole thing. I believe that... I have no disagreement with the other changes.
Okay, well, if it's better, hard for me
joint
to
and severally, perhaps.
No, otherwise, since they don't have any otherwise. Mm-hmm. Okay, Senator Shoemaker has moved the Dash A8 amendments as we've further modified them. Are there, well, we need to call a roll, please. Yeah.
Senator Brockman?
No.
Senator Ben?
No.
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator Shoemaker?
Probably alone, yes.
Senator Springer?
No.
Vice Chair Hill?
No.
Chair Cohen?
Aye. Okay, I think, and this was that.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bunn?
I'd move the bill to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Bunn moves House Bill 2375 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Madam Chair,
as it stands.
What about some of this other stuff?
In reading the bill, I did find a few other little things, and I have discussed these with Craig Smith, and he concurs in these, so may I suggest these as...
Well, why don't we find out whether we get it to the floor first?
Only one
we'll
foreign things here.
Is it not too late?
I don't mind taking little things, although I don't mind finding out if we were going to get it there with the little things.
I don't know if there are votes there.
Well, I don't know either, but I'm just afraid that after we go to the floor...
Well, I would ask. I'd like not to take up the time for the little things. I have a sense that this bill may not make it to the floor. I'd like to take the vote, and if we do get a vote, I will reconsider it and add the little things, if that's okay. Senator Bond has moved House Bill 2375 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Call the roll, please, Kate.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Ben?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
No.
Senator Springer?
No.
Vice Chair Hill?
No.
Chair Cohen?
No.
Madam Chair, not only am I willing to accept the little things, but I'm willing to accept the dash A8 if necessary.
All right, let me put the little...
Well, we may have three votes. I guess we need Senator Schumaker to proceed with the little thing to the body of House Bill 2375.
Okay. Going, I think, in descending order of importance.
Yep, get your pen out.
On page... 4 in line 26 and 27, it talks about the annual reports that are required from domestic and from foreign corporations. And from domestic corporations, it requires a designation of the professional license or authority of each shareholder and director. Whereas in foreign corporations, it only asks for the designation of the professional service or services rendered by the shareholders. It does not ask for their professional license or authority. I don't see any reason to give foreign corporations a leg up on that, and I think that those shareholders and directors of a foreign corporation who are licensed and are practicing in this state ought to also disclose on their annual report their license or authority. So I'd add that in addition to the designation of the professional service or services rendered, the designation of the professional license or authority of each shareholder and director, if any, licensed to render professional services in this state. I've got this written down on mine, so.
Okay.
That's one.
Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered. One, two, three. We're going to.
On page 3, on line 17, again regarding foreign professional corporations, it says they may not obtain authority to transact business in Oregon unless the name satisfies the statute and the foreign corporation is incorporated for one or more of the purposes described in Section 23. And Section 23 doesn't really, the only purpose is that of rendering professional services. The important thing about Section 23 is that corporation may render professional services to the extent is expressly authorized by the regulatory board applicable to each profession. And I think that's the important thing, that these foreign corporations be practicing here to the extent authorized by Oregon regulatory board. So I thought it would be better in line 17 of page 3 to simply say that it complies with Section 23. So there's no confusion on that point. If we foreign professional corporations, anybody practicing in this state for a foreign professional corporation has got to be appropriately licensed by the regulatory board, by the appropriate regulatory board.
Are there objections to that amendment? Hearing none, so
on. Yeah, then the others are just really small. On page 2, line 3, there's a reference to the professional service, which sort of implies that the professional corporation can only practice one professional service, and we know now that it can practice more than one. I think the ought to read a. And then on page 3, line 42, there's a word left out. It should say personally liable for that shareholder's own negligent or wrongful acts.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Senator Shoemaker then moves dash A amendments. Again.
Dash A amendments.
Right. Okay. Let's try it again, Kate.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
No.
Vice Chair Hill.
No.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. We have the dash A amendments adopted. We have the dash. I move the dash 4. Was it 4?
A4.
We've got them all.
And we just took some additional cleanup to the bill. I think the bill is in fragile shape, depending on whether it meets the equal protection part is another matter. But
there's nothing in the Democratic Party.
Right. Okay. House Bill 2375. Who is going to move this bill to the floor? Senator Shoemaker moves House Bill 2375 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I do want to thank Senator Shoemaker and other folks who worked through this bill for months to try to get something, if not at all. So whatever shape it's in, I know that it's taken a lot of time on a lot of people's part over the last 2 years, and I do want to thank them for their interest. Okay, Senator Shoemaker has moved the bill as we've amended it to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Let's try to call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
I'm sorry, this is on the bill as amended? No.
Yeah. Vice Chair Hill.
No.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, we have one quick little bill, and then we'll take up... another little quick bill. The House Bill 2594 is a work session. I'm sorry. I overlooked the fact we had a work session on it. This is the vaccine bill, folks.
The same old vaccine bill?
Same old vaccine.
Not quite.
Not quite.
Manufacturers are out of it.
Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is before us from the Oregon Medical Association. There are no amendments to the bill, and she said it relates to vaccine liability of an administrator, person who gives the vaccine, as opposed to the manufacturer. Madam Chair, if I remember from my hearing on the bill, the key question, I shouldn't say the key question, but
vaccines.
The point of controversy is on page 2, line 44, and that's the $250,000 cap on non-economic general damages.
Okay.
There's something about that, too.
Other than that, do we have any amendments in this bill?
No, Madam Chair, no amendments.
No amendments. We're discussing. Okay. Pleasure of the committee.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bunn.
Move the bill with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bunn has moved House Bill 2594 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
No.
Vice Chair Hill.
No.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Okay. Let's take up quickly. Wait, 3160. Is anyone here to speak to House Bill 3160?
Sir.
Let's just go ahead and take it. This bill, I think, came to us from the court administrator, right?
Well, no, Madam Chair.
Except for hearing for the first time today.
It's responsible by the Committee on Judiciary, but I believe it comes from the process servers because it increases the charge they may get for a service of process from $12.50 to $20 if the trip round trip is more than 100 miles. My records from the House show, at least what I heard from the House, that it came from the process service.
Well, folks, no one signed up that I know of. Your pleasure. Either put it in the bottom, huh?
House to the chair.
Okay. Senator Bunn moves that we table House Bill 3160. The motion is non-debatable. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
No.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
No.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. We'll have to rev it up if anybody wants it. In the next 2 days. Okay. House Bill 3051, Judge Harrell is here. He asked originally for us to wait until we got to 1:30, and
we did.
We did. Sorry. We had a few other pieces of business, but we're glad you're here.
Here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Hill. I'm a circuit court judge from Multnomah County, and I'm here in support of House Bill 3051, and I do so on my own behalf, and just to let you know that I also serve on what's called the Multnomah County Domestic Violence Steering Committee, and I chaired a national effort as chair of a committee and a project under the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, which dealt with domestic violence. And I believe what's being handed to you now, the little blue book, is the report that our committee did. And I'll refer to that in a couple of minutes. There's also another handout, I think, that you're getting. This bill may not look like much, but it's an extremely important bill, in my view, in terms of, I can't think of anything more important that you could do right now to combat domestic violence. This bill came out of the House Judiciary Committee with no dissenting votes, as I recall. And
we just tabled one of those, so you better not be too generous in terms of that.
ORS 135703 makes civil compromise unavailable in certain criminal proceedings, all of them crimes of violence. And what 3051 would do would be to add certain crimes of domestic violence to that list. Why? First, because I think the process is being abused, of using civil compromise as a way of disposing a huge number of cases in domestic violence. It's being used, frankly, as a procedural device to persuade or coerce the victim, who is already a very vulnerable individual, into dropping the case. And at its worst, it's a continuation of the very abusive power that brought the batterers into court in the first place. In short, it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, and further victimizes the victim. What's wrong with it is this: it's not a compromise. The defendant seldom agrees to do anything, and all that really happens is that the victim is talked into dropping the case. How this works in practice is that as soon as defense counsel is appointed, certainly in my county, there's a race to see who can get to the victim first, and the defense counsel usually wins. They draw up some boilerplate forms, and I've distributed some to you, and I'm going to refer to them in just a minute. They then contact the victim, who's unrepresented by counsel, and persuade her to sign these forms. That's good lawyering. I'm not being critical of the people who are doing this by any means. They're doing what good lawyers ought to do and what the system affords them. But these people are ridden by guilt and sympathy and economic hardship and their own loss of self-esteem, sometimes over a period of years. And they do rather readily sign these forms. And by the time the district attorney's office gets into the act, it's basically a done deal. Well, the big misconception about civil compromise really comes in. I'd ask you to refer to some forms here with it's got the public defender's letterhead at the beginning. And incidentally, I should explain that I felt free to give you these forms because these were presented to the House Judiciary Committee when a member or someone who worked for that firm testified. But I think the illustrate point that I'm trying to make better than almost any other thing. The civil compromise agreement, which is the third page there, when you read through it, you'll see it doesn't obligate the defendant to do anything. All it says is that the victim acknowledges satisfaction and agrees to drop the case. And that's, in effect, indeed, what happens in practice in all of these cases, or most of them, at least. The defendant, in fact, just convinces the victim to go ahead and drop it. It's important to remember that this is not a level playing field. And these victims are, as I said, they're very vulnerable people. Intimidation and control are the whole essence of domestic violence in the first place. And these people sometimes have been regularly intimidated and victimized over years. The purpose of civil compromise is to resolve wrongful conduct outside the criminal justice system, and instead of punitive sanctions, to provide for restitution for an injury that's done. And I think the statute, the civil compromise statute, is basically designed for property crimes, and that's how it's best used. But where no restitution to the victim is ever paid or ever intended, and it's nothing but an agreement to drop the case, then the whole purpose of civil compromise is not being served. Even if the victim does agree, or if the court makes them agree, to get some sort of counseling, which is seldom done, those agreements are unenforceable, of course, because what's happened is that the case is dismissed. It isn't like a civil compromise in a property crime where there's a promissory note or cash payment or something like that. It's just a hollow promise. So the thing is basically a trying to think of the word from law school. It's not coming down. I think it's nugatory, isn't that it? Agreement. The National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, and it's in this, as I say, a little pamphlet that was handed out to you, recommends against civil compromise in these cases. It's been a problem in a number of states. Several states have done and are doing what House Bill 3051 would do, which is to abolish it in domestic violence cases. And let me just end by saying, as bad as the criminal justice system sometimes is, and I'm as aware as anyone of how that is, where these dismissals of phony compromises are done really sends a message that domestic violence in the state is okay. And that is the message that's out there, I regret to say. So I urge that you do pass House Bill 3051 out with a do pass recommendation. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.